and welcome to Futures Focus, a fantasy baseball podcast centering around all the top prospects in the game, brought to you by Prospects 1500. My name is Alex Sanchez. Joining me is my co-host, Nate Eckert. And we are back with you guys to go over the top 50 prospects for the AL East. And with us today, we do have a special guest on to help us with the AL East. It's new to the squad here, Adam Green. And yes, there is a relation. Adam, welcome aboard. It's good to have you on for the first time here on Futures Focus.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on. Excited to talk some prospects. Now go over some of the top guys in the AL East and look forward to the season ahead.
Yeah, excellent. And you are Scott Green's son out in college. And, you know, the amount of work that you've been putting in with all of these teams, Adam has been a focal point on every single one of the top 30 lists. That was quite an adventure. How much did you learn going over that? I'm sure your wealth of knowledge has grown exponentially.
You know, I couldn't even begin to tell you how much of a just larger understanding I have for, you know, guys in all 30 organizations now. It really started in like mid-December. My dad kind of came up to me, and I had done some articles for the site, just like five or six. Uh-huh. And then he was like, how would you like helping us out with some of the blurbs for the top 50s? And I said, you know what? Okay, I can try it out. And what that kind of snowballed into was heavy research and studying up on guys in all 30 organizations. So it was a crazy ride, but I had a great time.
Yeah. And I have to say, the amount of detail that we have in all of the blurbs is really astonishing. I think that, you know, some people would write a little bit less than others, and others would write more as well. Some people gave too much. It was just like, nobody's going to read three paragraphs worth of prospect for 50 guys, you know? So we found a nice medium. I enjoy writing them, and I enjoy reading them as well. I think they're very helpful. It's a fine line between too little and too much information. So to be at least consistent, really, really, really helpful. And then, Nate, how you doing over there?
Oh, I'm good. You're out in UMass, isn't that right, Adam?
Yep, UMass Amherst.
Now, I don't know about you. You probably weren't born yet, Adam, but perhaps Sanchezi was. Do you remember the UMass squad with Marcus Camby back in the day, the 7-foot dominant center?
I personally don't. I probably wasn't born for that, but
he
still has a pretty big presence here.
Yeah, Alex, do you remember, though? I knew you wouldn't be born, Adam. But what about you? What about you?
I remember Marcus Camby very well, but yeah. I didn't know he went to UMass, or I didn't follow his college career. But I didn't think we'd bring him up. But
UMass and UConn, those were some great old school college matchups there for college basketball. But that's not why we're here. It's college. It's MLB prospects and baseball. So. Excited to get into it, boys.
Yeah, let's get right into it. We're going over the NL East, or the NL East. That's what I would like to do as a Braves fan. AL East, and with Adam having a lot of expertise with the Red Sox, and then again, obviously, whoever the Red Sox play, you know, he's going to be, it's kind of his area, I think, of specialty. So he's going to help us along. I think, you know, Nate, we're pretty good with the NL West, and we'll be good when we get to the NL East too, but we definitely need some help today. And just before we begin, I also wanted to mention, I kind of failed to do this last week. I was so excited to jump in to the list right away, but I should mention them. You know, if you're a new listener to Prospects 1500, or if this is your first episode, we do have a tier system here that's quite important because it gives you an idea of, you know, where a guy stacks up with the rest of the league. Because if you have a poor organization, let's say like the Marlins in terms of prospects, and you're looking at their number one prospect, and then you're looking at the number eighth prospect for the Orioles, we don't want you to get those two mixed up and think one's clearly better than the other. The tier system allows us to realize just how good some of these prospects are and kind of ignore the rankings within those tiers. I think they're pretty interchangeable for the most part. It's when they are going between tiers. So as a reminder, tier one, and I'm quoting the site here, you can check it out, are players with high expectations of both making the majors and playing at an all-star level for a number of years. To me, I've always interpreted that as has a chance to make at least one all-star team, and then you'd be willing to bet on it happening. So that always sort of limited my tier one players. We have tier two players with the definition of players with an above average expectation of making the majors and being a solid contributor. So an everyday player in my book that you're pretty confident on. Tier three are players with an average expectation of making the majors and being a solid contributor. So you're not nearly as confident in these guys, about a 50-50 chance they make the majors, and then being a solid contributor, you're maybe even a bench player or a fourth outfielder, utility type of guy. We get to tier four. Those are players that have the potential to make the majors as sleeper candidates or sustained MLB success. I always thought of these guys as guys that I kind of like, that if I see a 90th and 95th percentile outcome, that they would make the major leagues, and anything less than that means they're probably never making it. And the fifth tier was worth an interest. You know, we have to come up with 50, so some guys are going to make it, but you would not bet on these guys to necessarily make an impact in the majors, or let alone make it. And so when we look at the tiers through all the teams, about 2% of our 1,500 prospects are tier one players, which is about 30 players total. And about 5% after that will make the tier two. So that's 75 players or so. This is a rough estimate, by the way. It's not, this is what we go for. So that gives you an idea. If you're a top 100 prospect, you're probably in the tier one or tier two. After that, 13% can be found in tier three, 35% in tier four, and 45% in tier five. There we go. Got that out of the way. And every time now, Nate, we'll say refer back to this episode if you want information on the tier.
go back to the AL East episode and start it at exactly 5 minutes, 45 seconds in.
Yeah, we'll get double the listens. Perfect. Okay, we start with the Toronto Blue Jays, who are in a very interesting spot for me in terms of the major league level, in that they're not quite up to the level of where the Red Sox and Yankees have been. They seemingly have been passed by the Orioles as the new kid on the block. The system is okay, I think is the best way I would describe it. I definitely don't think it's bad, but there's a lot missing in it. And I think that they definitely are at a crossroads, I think, especially with, you know, Vladdy and Bo getting a little bit closer to free agency. They haven't signed either of those guys. They're just right. I'm not crazy.
Yeah, not to my knowledge.
They're still heading toward free agency. So tier one, we have Ricky Tiedemann, a left-handed pitcher who has seemingly been on the tier one for the Blue Jays now for a while. I think we've kind of been anticipating his arrival for a few seasons, maybe not a few, but maybe one or two. And, you know, some injuries have kind of slowed him down. The stuff's still there. You know, I'm a little bit lower on these pitching prospects just in general. I still think he's a tier one prospect. I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you think, Adam, when you were looking at this? Was he close to dropping out of tier one, or is he a pretty slam dunk for you?
Yeah, for sure. I actually do agree. I think he's probably on that like fringe tier two guy, but we bumped him up to tier one. And I think it's fair. I mean, when he's healthy, the stuff's 100% there. But, you know, one of the big things with prospects is just, can you stay healthy? And, I mean, if you can't do that, you're going to fall. So, I mean, we're going to have to see what he looks like when he comes back. But definitely on that, you know, fringe area. But I don't think tier one's unreasonable by any means.
Nate, where do you view Tiedemann on a top 100 list for you, if you were making one?
Now, granted, I would love to see how he, I don't know, halfway through the season, how many starts he has under his belt, but I don't have that luxury. I'm just going to say this, assuming that he is healthy and he'll stay healthy for the most part for the rest of his career. I love Tiedemann. I remember when we were at the Futures game and his brother was there. His whole family was there, but his brother was there, and I talked to him for like 15 or 20 minutes. I mean, it was crazy that I had to realize and remember that the kid was only 19 at that time, and he's just such a big-bodied pitcher, you know, from with this, and he's a lefty. His stuff is phenomenal. And the only reason why I'm banking, why I'm more trending toward, I'd say top 20 to 30 overall, is because how well he did at the AFL in four starts. It's a good sign that he's now healthy. He threw really well. His stuff looked just as dominant as it always has been. And so long as he maintains that health, I have absolutely no problem investing in Tiedemann going forward.
When we look at the innings he did pitch, the ERA, very high, walks a little higher than you'd like to see, but the strikeouts still very high. And to me, that's a great indicator with the AFL stuff as well, that, you know, bounce back by low. I think that some people might be scared about him at the moment, but definitely a big gap, Adam, don't you say, between Tiedemann and then our next guy on the list, Orelvis Martinez. Just how sizable was that gap for you? Because I'm saying that no tier two players mentioned for the Jays. So just how big of a gap are we looking at between these two?
It's pretty noticeable. And, you know, in a division like the AL East, that's where it really kills you to not have any of those, you know, tier two and a more tier three guys, because when you're going to be going up against these organizations like the Red Sox and the Yankees and even the Rays, you're going to want more of those tier two guys. So it was a pretty big drop off to, you know, go from Tiedemann to Orelvis, but, you know, that's where the organization's at, and they put all their chips in with some of the guys like Vladdy and Bichette, as we were talking about earlier. So it's going to be interesting to see what some of those tier three guys can do this season, maybe bump themselves up to tier two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty okay with him in tier two right now. The 28 homers, clearly nice. What's your biggest concern with Orelvis in that kept him down in tier three?
Probably just the strikeout totals. I mean, when you have like a power bat like that, you're going to strike out a lot. But it was pretty noticeable this year. He had like around 125, I remember, strikeouts. And the walk rate wasn't exactly there. It was more than any of his other previous seasons. But the thing with him is, if you put him in any major league lineup right now, you're going to get 25, maybe even 30 homers. Mm-hmm. His power is just that good.
Yeah. And with Matt Chapman kind of on the way out, still not signed. So I guess we'll get a big idea of what the future holds if they re-sign Chapman. I doubt they will, but you never know. And yeah, like you said, you could plug him in for 30 homers right now in that lineup. He's kind of exciting, but he hasn't shown the hit tool in the minors. You'd like these sluggers to at least have a season or two where they have a very nice, at least potential to have a hit tool. I don't expect them to hit 250 or 260 in the majors, but when they're hitting like that already in the minors, I get a little worried. Nate, I know you're kind of our draft specialist among the three of us here. So Arjun Namala, shortstop, 18-year-old draft pick. What are your thoughts on him, and tier three player for him as well? Do you think that's fair? Do you have him on your top 100 list? A lot of questions there. Go ahead and answer them.
No, but he's probably standing around 120, 125. There's a lot to love about his projection, and he's one of those guys where a lot of things are going to have to come to fruition before we can really start heavily investing in him. I know he's definitely one of my targets coming up in my two first-year player drafts. I mean, he's 6'1", 170. He's got a great frame. He's only 18. Came out of high school, and the Blue Jays loved him, took him 20th overall. Again, he wasn't at the draft, like a lot of players weren't this year, but I would have loved to have seen him in person just to have a better idea of what he looked like, how he carried himself, just how, you know, broad his shoulders were, things like that. But I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if we started hearing about him pretty early. Once he gets his, you know, his feet under him, there's a lot of projection. I think of like, Jordan Walker when he was still kind of raw, before he started becoming like one of the top names in baseball. No way he'll stick at short, but he absolutely can stick at third. He's got a good arm, and, there's a lot to like about this kid. I don't know how much I would pay for him straight out of the gate just because he's kind of an unknown. But I like the projection, and if I were taking a shot, you know, and just didn't care, yeah, I'd roll the dice on Namala, no problem. If I'm taking him in a first year players draft, if say second round probably, I wouldn't be mad at that whatsoever.
No, that would be great value. And like you said, long, I don't, well, you didn't say this, but you implied it, a long wait as well with him in dynasty leagues, yeah. But you know, yeah. 14 walks to 8 strikeouts as a 17-year-old making debuts, encouraging, definitely one to watch for the Jays. Now, the next guy that we have on the list is Alan Roden. I'm going to let you talk about him, Adam, and then I want to talk about Addison Barger. I know him very, very well. Alan Roland, I don't know as much. A 2022 draft pick, 24-year-old in Double A already. So, what do we think about Alan Roden?
You know, he had not a fantastic debut back in 22. It was a 233 average with a 685 OPS in 25 games. But come this season, he plays 115 games and just wows you. I mean, he had 317, almost up like 90-something points from last year with an 890 OPS. He was killing it this year. He really boosted his stock, and he's got that, you know, good hit tool, rounded out, can do some power, steal some bases. I think he's probably on the up and excited to see what he can do this year.
Yeah, I feel like there's a bunch of these 24, 25-year-olds that, you know, we don't really worry about after they have a struggle in their debut. Like Blake Dunn, Jacob Melton, a couple other names as well that come to mind. But he, you're right, absolutely boosted his stock. It's a guy worth paying attention to. Definitely fast track if he continues these skills that he's been showing recently. So yeah, pretty exciting. But I did want to talk about Addison Barger, a guy that I've liked for a while. I think I've mentioned him multiple times on the podcast. I think he has just a phenomenal approach and attack at the plate with just a brilliant swing that shows a lot of power and promise, plus with some good dual eligibility, infielder, outfielder type. He had a disaster last year. It was not what I was hoping for when I basically acquired him wherever I could. But it does help explain why some of the struggles were there with the injury. So had, you know, an elbow injury that really sort of limited him and what he was capable of doing, 9 home runs in only 88 games, but was able to return and really kind of hit a nice groove there at the end of the year. Something to look at going forward. I think you're going to, you know, I was expecting to make the majors last year, wasn't able to do so. But when you take a look at his 2022, I think we're going to find something in the middle of both of these performances where he hit over 20 home runs, over 300, and then kind of put that in comparison with what he did last year. Something in the middle of those two seasons in the majors, I think I'm very confident in projecting. I just got to find some playing time for him somewhere. But overall, really excited about this guy. I might find a way to put him on my top 100 list if I'm being honest. So, but I think I'm one of the higher guys on Barger that you'll find. Let's go ahead and jump through these last couple here. We have Brandon Barry Era, a left-hander from in 19-year-old in the 2022 draft as well. Nate, what do you think about this guy? One of the few arms that we really have on here. We had Tiedemann, and then we kind of have a lot of position players, and we finally get to another pitcher here. What do you think of him? I know he's a long ways away, but number six on the list is something to consider.
Yeah, I like Barry Era. You know, he kind of fits the mold with Tiedemann. He's a big-bodied left-hander. Tiedemann, of course, is bigger. He's he's got 2 inches on him and probably about 30 pounds. But he's also, let's see here, he's 21 and, I'm sorry, Tiedemann's 21 and Barry Era is still 19. So we'll see what happens with the body fill out as he gets older and matures more physically. First rounder in 2022, came out of that high school in Plantation, Florida, that's known for Eric Hosmer, Tristan Cassis. And he, as far as I'm concerned, he's had some injury, a couple of injuries. That's why he didn't debut in 22. And he only got a whopping 20 and one-thirds innings pitched in 2023 due to elbow. Let's see here. I got it right here. Elbow, shoulder, and bicep issues. So that's a pretty big red flag. You know, you want to see him healthy throughout an entire season because, I'm sorry, but 20 and one-third innings pitched is just not a big enough sample size, especially when you think about how highly touted this kid is. I will say, though, during those 20 and one-third, he only gave up 10 hits and had 25 strikeouts, and the opponent average was 149. So, I mean, he's definitely got good stuff, but concerns about his 6'2", 180 frame, they may be warranted, but let's just hope that this kid can stay healthy next year.
As we kind of finish up here with the Blue Jays, I'll let you kind of give me some of your sleepers, Adam. I think you have probably some good names for us, but two guys that stick out to me. I'm really pleased to see Spencer Horwitz this high. I think a lot of lists that I'm looking at barely get him on top 30. He's done nothing but hit for like the last three seasons for the Blue Jays and even hit in the majors pretty well. And I don't know how you can rank some of these other guys ahead of him at the moment. So to have him at 11th is encouraging. And Emmanuel Bonilla is another name that I've been excited about since he signed with the Blue Jays as an international guy. Very exciting tools. And you have him up at 21. So pretty encouraging to see those two guys there. But any other sleepers that catch your eye, if you wanted to talk about Leo Jimenez or anybody else that maybe we've looked over so far?
Yeah, so actually right under Bonilla, Gabriel Martinez, I'm pretty excited about him. He did not have like a great showing in his high A debut, but I think he's going to have a better season. And just a little bit above him, Josh Kosevich at 18, I think he's a really exciting shortstop prospect. And then down in tier 5, Adrian Pinto actually hit pretty well in his 2023 season. So I think if he can just add a little bit more power and maybe, you know, get a tick up with the speed, get some more stolen bases, he could probably be climbing up some ranks too.
Excellent. So overall, Adam, you know, if we had to give this system a grade, what do you think you'd give it? Let's give it like on a scale of 1 to 10. What do you think it is? 10 being the best.
So 1 to 10 is tough because you want to give them, you know, a pretty high grade because you got some guys that are going to be good in the major leagues looking at the top with Tiedemann and Martinez, but really having no tier 2 guys really kills them. So the highest I would go is maybe 5.5 compared to some of these other organizations. And I think maybe you can maybe go 6 if you're really high on some of these other guys that had down seasons, but I wouldn't go any higher than that.
Yeah. Well, a team that has a perfect 10 that I think nobody can argue is the next team we're going to go to. That's the Baltimore Orioles, the envy of everybody's eye, a team that, you know, I think is going to compete for a World Series this year. I think last year was that jump that to where everybody is going to pay attention, and I don't see how they don't improve moving forward. There's so many guys. For how much we just took with the Blue Jays, I can't imagine how long this list is going to take us. The biggest argument here are going to be like, I know Tier 1's supposed to be really elite, but honestly, I can see all six of these guys that we have in the top six being All-Stars at some point. Like, and I would bet they all are at some point, honestly. Like, I would have no problem putting all six of these guys into the Tier 1. And those six guys, by the way, are Jackson Holliday, Samuel Basalo, who we do have in Tier 1. Then we move to Tier 2 with Coby Mayo, Colton Cowser, Heston Kjerstad, and Connor Norby. So what do you think of that, Adam? I'm getting crazy. I don't think we've ever seen anybody put six guys. I think Nate was the closest. He always put all of his Dodger guys in Tier 1. But I'm ready to put
close to six.
I'm ready to put all six of these guys in. Can you talk me off the ledge, Adam, before Scott lets me go from the team?
You know, man, it's crazy. I'm just looking at the list right now. There's no holes really here. You're looking at just a 10 out of 10 organization for their prospects. Just look at the Orioles right now. I mean, Jackson Holliday, there's really no explanation needed. Everyone knows what he did last season, boosting himself up to probably close to consensus number one prospect in the game. I don't think there's a crazy argument against that. Basalo, the year he had, looking like their future everyday catcher for sure. And then Mayo, Cowser, you know, the Tier 2 guys, like you were just saying, there's arguments for them to be in Tier 1. So with guys with MLB experience, AAA, that are real close to the majors, it's pretty scary looking at that organization. There's a lot to be excited for the Orioles fans.
Yeah. Let's keep this quick for these top guys and see if we can't find some value down below, because I think you can with these guys in the teens in this organization. People are just not going to see them in top 10 lists and they're going to just write them off. But we'll do kind of a rapid fire. Jackson Holliday, number one prospect in baseball for you, Adam, or is it somebody else?
I don't think there's an argument against him being the number one prospect in baseball. Look at what he did last season, and he's only 20. I mean, the kid's going to be in the majors this year, and I think he's for sure the number one prospect in the game.
Yeah. Nate, what do you think? Do you have anybody above him?
Nope. Just Holliday.
Me either. He'll be my number one. I love shortstops. I love the bloodlines. I love the swag. I love the organization. I like the fact that he's not right-handed playing in that ballpark. I mean, there's nothing wrong with him at all, except for nothing. The people that picked Drew Jones over him in first-year player drafts.
So ooh.
Peace. Now, next question, Samuel Basalo. Now, he's a guy that these other guys, I think most people are going to know a lot about. They've been around a while, but Basalo is a big riser. He passed up all of those big names with an number two overall pick and Kjerstad with everybody's favorite Gunnar Henderson replica and Coby Mayo. But you have Samuel Basalo, and you said something pretty crazy. I don't know if you realize what you said, but definitely the catcher of the future. This is an organization that has Adley Rutschman at catcher. So
I'm not gonna lie, I was not even thinking about Adley when I said that, because of how stacked this Orioles organization is with their prospects. I was just looking like, how can you have a better catcher than Basalo after what he did this season? But no, I will walk that back. That just slipped my mind, man.
It's okay.
But it's gonna be, you're not wrong, though. I mean, he will probably catch for them, and Adley's going to DH on those other days, and it's going to keep both of them super fret. The concern is, as good as Basalo is, you know, if he's not catching, and, you know, you're going to have – you have a couple of guys that need to play first on this team because other positions will be taken. So it will be interesting to see how he gets the at-bats or if he does get traded. What's really annoying is that these guys were able to trade for – Corbin Burns, who you would think would take one of these top six guys, and yet it doesn't.
Right. No.
Can I throw in a quick note about that? Of course. That trade happened on we should the talk about day it. We posted this article. And, you know, it's crazy because I feel like at least like 4 or 5 times over the top 30s being released, the day we posted them, that team would make a move. But this one was for sure the biggest. And when people saw that Joey Ortiz was heading to Milwaukee, guess what happened? The website crashed because there was so many people hopping on to try and see what's up with the Orioles prospects that are heading over in the trade. But, you know, it's cool to see people care that much. It was awesome, but pretty funny that, of course, just hours after this goes up for everyone to see, you know, trade. But
of course, how it is. Of course.
I'm blanking on the other name. It was Ortiz and who else went?
DL Hall. DL Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty light. Pretty light there.
Pretty light. Gasper. Pretty light.
Oh, Gasper's struggling.
Okay.
Furious.
Yeah. Vasallo is a stud. A guy that you might be able to get. Okay, here's the question. Let's see. Just give me a number. Don't give me an explanation or anything. And I know you probably haven't done your list. That's why this is fun. So, Nate, where is he at on your top 100? Just give me a number.
19.
Adam?
I want to go right around there. I don't want to steal your number, but I'm going to go 17.
Yeah. That's a good number. I think I could go up to like 20 as well. So, in that range, I think is that's how high he is. I think a lot of people will see him as a top 70, 60 guy, especially if they're like not as into, maybe they don't listen to this podcast and they see a Rutschman and they see an Orioles catcher and they just assume that's not going to work out. But I would invest with him because he's 19. So he's a ways away. They have a time to figure it out. But a guy that's, you know, the next, here's what's crazy is all four of these next guys we're going to talk about. I mean, that Holiday and Vasallo are probably a year away. I wouldn't bet the house that Holiday isn't up this year, but I would not anticipate a huge impact. But these next four guys, and Kobe Mayo, Kowser, Kerstad, and Norby, are going to, one of them is going to just explode. Like, I'm fairly confident on that. I'm pretty sure one will probably suck too and just not do much. But they're going to make an impact. The question is, let's do that. Let's do that game. Mm-hmm. You have one. It's like the who would you marry? Who would you? I can't say that. Yes. Let's do who's going to blow up and who's going to not. Who's going to fail miserably? And you have to use those words. So
okay.
That we can come
all right.
Back.
So, all right.
Adam, pick one to be an all-star this year and one that doesn't even make it to the bigs.
That's a pretty tough question. I think for the guy that's going to blow up, I would probably go Kowser. I was pretty impressed with what I saw, even if the numbers weren't like, they didn't blow you away by any means. It was probably just the tick over 100 average, but some of the intangible things, you know, he looked good. He had a great season in the minors. I think he's going to, it's like you were talking about earlier, everyone needs an adjustment period. So I think if anyone, he's probably going to have the best overall season in the majors. And for someone that might not, I'm not quite sold on Norby yet. I saw him play very briefly, but I mean, if you look at the numbers in Norfolk, it was okay. I mean, he's hit probably close to 300, hit 21 jacks, but again, the limited experience and hasn't even made the majors yet, as opposed to some of these other guys we're looking at. So obviously could be wrong, but I would go with those two for my picks.
Interesting. What about you, Nate? Same question. One to blow up, one to not make it.
Oh, hands down, I'm going Kerstad to blow up, and to not make it, I'm going with Kowser because of his terrible debut last year. It just looked like he was completely in over his head, and I hate saying this because I was like one of the biggest guys on Kowser coming in the last year. I hope he proves me wrong. I do, but it's just my gut saying that Kowser's not going to climb out of that terrible debut he had last year. Kerstad, on the other hand, I think has been underrated probably for as long as he's been a prospect, except for that very first year. After he got his swing together, his power is tremendous, and I'm just high on him. So I hate to say it, but yeah, Kershaw's going to blow up. Kowser's going to struggle.
You know, Kowser isn't like he's kind of weird to watch. He doesn't look like the most graceful player out there in terms of the swing, but I do like him a lot. But I can't agree with Nate. I think I would agree more with Adam that he's going to blow up. But my pick is going to be Connor Norby for blowing up. I've really believed in him. He's done nothing but hit. And I think there's a better chance for him to crack the lineup than any of these other guys. When you think about it, Kowser and Kerstad kind of have to compete with each other. And don't forget, there's Santander and Mullen still out there. Probably some of the guys I'm forgetting is Mountcastle. I don't know if he can. Is he an outfielder or first base more? I guess he's
first base. He's first base.
And then so that blocks Mayo. Mayo's not taking over at, you know, third with Gunner, or if, you know, Jack. I don't know. There's just, to me, it's easier for Norby to get up and then just be awesome. And then the guy that I would pick to not make it is Kerstad for that reason. I do believe in all of these guys, and I do believe in Kerstad. I think he's going to end up hitting 40. He's going to be like just a masher, Chris Davis type of guy down the line, hit 40 homers. But I just think he's a little bit blocked and not quite ready yet. But he's got tremendous power. These guys are all so much fun. And none of us even mentioned Coby Mayo, who is just like going to be Austin Riley essentially for the Orioles. They're basically going to add that type of bat to this team with Gunner. And it's crazy team, man. This team is just insane. So, and then we go to tier three. Like, honestly, I feel like you just had to stop at tier two because I could see Beavers being in there.
Yep,
and then I think that probably ends as well. But Dylan Beavers, I mean, to me, this is the guy that we should talk about more than any of the other ones because nobody's selling you those guys. Maybe Norby you can get for a decent price, but nobody else is selling you those guys for cheap. But I do think you can get Dylan Beavers at a discount now because he's sort of overshadowed. Is that a reasonable analysis of him, Adam?
Yeah, I think he could probably, you know, we could bump him up to that tier two just because of how good he has looked. The thing I would question is he going to stay in center? If he is, then for sure that's a perfect evaluation that you just had. But if he can't, then, you know, maybe you drop him down a little bit because that center field defense is pretty important. But he does have that 20-20 potential at the plate. So I wouldn't put it above him, but I wouldn't say he's not capable of it either.
Mm-hmm. And then Enrique Bradfield Jr., Nate, another drafted guy for you, a guy you won't see. I don't see him high on first-year player drafts, but that stolen base only guy, and I think he's more than that, don't get me wrong, but clearly that's what you're getting him for. But those guys are becoming a little bit more valuable, I think, than we might have thought, just because everybody else is stealing bases. Seems like these stolen base only guys are just going even higher. Like, if people are stealing 5 to 10 extra bases a year, these guys are stealing 20 to 30 extra bases a year, which could be the difference in a lot of categories. So what do you think of Bradfield Jr.? Is he kind of a Malik Smith, or is he going to erupt and kind of be a better all-around player?
I think Bradford, honestly, has one of the better chances of any and all first-year player drafts players to making it this year and cracking that lineup as, say, like their center fielder. Say Mullins goes down, and they need somebody who's just really great with his glove, and they need speed at the top of their lineup. He is the prototypical top of the order leadoff guy. He just is. I mean, he screams Kenny Lofton. He has 15 plus potential home runs in him. He's a lot stronger than people think. Last year in his cup of coffee, he got drafted. You know, he went from Vandy to the draft to playing in, let's see here, three different levels. He ended in single A advance where he didn't do so well, but who cares? 291 average, 802 OPS, 25 games, 79 at bats. So 25 games, 25 stolen bases. So when he gets to the bigs and those crazy new rules are in effect, I mean, Bradford goes out of his way to steal bases. And when he was a junior, I believe, or maybe he was a sophomore, because I don't know if he was drafted as a senior or I feel like he was at Vandy forever. But I'm going to say it was his sophomore year. He stole 46 bags out of 46 chances. So the kids, he's really smart, too. So when you get that mixed in with all those new rules and the pitcher's still trying to figure everything out, I would not be surprised to see like a here's a throwback to the Red Sox glory days, Jacoby Ellsbury type out there late in the season, you know, really making a difference for a playoff for sure, possible World Series team in the future.
Yeah. You're right. He was a sophomore when he stole 46 of 46. Impressive.
Yep.
Doesn't strike out either. He's a really, really impressive college.
His on base percentage this year, after coming out of the draft, 473 across three levels.
Yeah. Excellent. Our number 10 guy here is Cade Povich, and your father, Scotty, said we should claim this guy immediately in dynasty leagues, and I haven't looked to see if he's available in a lot of mine, but what do you think about that statement? Is this guy that we should go and pick up right away?
You know, I would love to just say, if my dad said it, don't do it, but for Povich, you know,
I'd love you to say that too.
Yeah, I think you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's looked pretty good. He had he didn't have a great ERA. I mean, it was around a 5, but he was striking out what 170 guys. I mean, if you're throwing to 171 strikeouts in the minors, I think you're looking pretty good. You want to pick that guy up. I'm by no means a dynasty expert, but 171 strikes out speaks for itself. And if you look at some of the other numbers, it was a 12.2 strikeouts per nine. He threw 126 innings. The walk rate was not unreasonable. It wasn't great, but I would for sure take a good look at him and pick him up if you got the chance.
Yeah, the strikeouts are very encouraging. The ERAs have not been great, and I was trying to figure out why, and then I saw the home run total. So he is giving up a bunch of homers. So that, you know, Baltimore, it might not be the worst place for him to end up in terms of maybe kind of limiting that. If he stays in the ballpark and he's striking everybody out, then we got somebody. I do see him available in one of my leagues. He's gone in everyone else. So I might take a lot
of walks. A lot of walks also, 66 last year in 126 innings.
Yeah. All right. I mean, we could continue to talk about these Orioles. You got Chase McDermott at 11, Judd Fabian, another guy that I think is overrated because of the fact that he wasn't the number one pick, but for the team, and Mac Hovarth. But I'm very happy to see him at 13. I don't think you'll see him that high in other publications. He's a great first year player draft. I got him with my like 35th overall pick in one of my leagues. It was just like, okay, yeah, take that. Anybody else, Adam, down here? Because like I said earlier, these are guys that people are going to overlook when they don't see him in the top 10. But
yeah, I also
am familiar with some of these guys down below. So are they worth it?
I would keep an eye on Trace Bright. He looked pretty good through his 2023 season. At the end, around, I think it was late August, maybe it was September, they bumped him up to AA, and he had a 4.3 ERA on the season. Then he looked really good in his 17 innings in AA. He had a 2.12 ERA. He was giving up almost no hits. The walk rate came way down, and I think he would be a pretty good player to keep an eye on if you're looking down in, you know, the Tier 4, Tier 5 area. But like I was talking about, this organization is just crazy with their prospects, and there's a reason why they're pretty consistently ranked up at the top.
There's not a lot of names down here that are getting me super excited, but definitely the development that they've shown these last couple of years, especially with hitters. We still haven't quite seen it with the pitchers yet. Grayson seemingly turned the corner, but man, it was difficult getting Grayson to be what we want him to be. I was listening to this podcast, Nate, last year. When he didn't make the team out of spring, and they said he just wasn't good enough for us, and we all laughed.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Your number one guy, maybe this is what they do, is they go trade for high-end pitching guys like Corbin Burns, and you know, we've seen Kyle Bradish turn into a fringe one.
Probably not quite there yet, but I mean
if you get, you don't need a bunch of pitchers, you just need five good ones and then you're set, and they seemingly have three. So but these guys, you know, I want Norby traded. There's no doubt. I think he needs to go to another organization so he can play consistently. Maybe Basalo as well, if you're a dynasty owner, just because you want him to catch and retain that eligibility, but you also want him to play. And it's going to, you know, Adley's going to play every day, like for the next 5 years. I think eventually probably he moves out of catcher to protect him. But, you know, Posey played back there for a while. Anyway, rambling on here, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll come back. Based on this, we might have to do a part one, part two episode for this, as there's just a lot to talk about with these teams, and I know these are very popular teams too. I definitely don't want to skip out on the ALE. So we'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back after this. This is Futures Focus.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Futures Focus here with you. Nate Ecker joining me. My name is Alex Sanchez with special guest, son of the CEO. That makes you the SCEO. I don't know what the acronym is, but Adam Green is here with us.
We'll go with that.
We're not going to keep you here for much longer. I know you're a busy college student. You're probably hitting the books on this Friday night, you know, studying up, getting a good night sleep, waking up early to continue studying. So we'll go ahead with one more team here, and then we'll have to probably finish the rest. Let's get the Red Sox, just in case we don't get you back here for a part two, Adam. Let's go over and talk about your favorite team, and that way you don't have to feel rushed and like, well, we got to get through these Red Sox, because I feel like if we talk about the Rays, it's another team that's going to be half an hour worth of discussion. But we go to the Boston Red Sox, a team that, well, I'll let you decide where they're at. I was, you know, it was funny when they, because I'm a Braves fan. I don't know if you knew that or not, Adam, but when we had that trade with Vaughn Grissom for Chris Sale, that was interesting. And I remember when Vaughn Grissom made his debut and he looked like Ted Williams out there and the right-handed version of him hitting homers and pimping it out, and I think he convinced the Red Sox that he's something else. But at the flip side, I think a lot of Red Sox fans, and you could tell me, are thinking, well, we tricked the Braves into taking on Chris Sale and his contract because he's going to do 10 starts and then hurt. So what were your thoughts about that trade? And I guess we could kind of treat Grissom as a prospect in a way. Where would he end up on this list for you?
He would probably be pretty high. I was really high on Grissom when we made the trade. I know the numbers didn't look great, but when you're hitting in a park like Gwinnett, I think the numbers are going to be down a little bit. I would throw him in maybe around where York is, in that 6-7 area. I'm pretty excited about him. And also, I actually got the chance to meet him just 2 weeks ago. He's a great guy. Really excited about him. But where I worry is, you were talking about like, oh, did the Red Sox trick the Braves into taking on Sale's contract? I'm worried that the Braves tricked the Red Sox into getting Sale and, you know, getting him back to form, see what he can do. I feel like it was a week after they traded for him, they extended him, right?
Yeah. Well, he has the option, I think, the $20 million.
Got it. Too. Got it.
So Yeah, something like that.
You know how those Braves do.
Yeah.
Well, Grissom can't play defense, though. Like, he has no...
I knew that was going to come out.
I Alex watched Keith him. Grissom, I've never once had this feeling ever that a ground ball would make me nervous watching a big league game. And I know we haven't had, you know, there's been guys that haven't been great, but I literally would hold my breath when a ground ball went to him at shortstop.
I know what you're talking about, man. I had to watch Kike Hernandez play short for half the season last year, but, you know, that's where I think all the Red Sox fans put their hope in, push all in on Marcelo Myers coming up. Everyone's excited about him, the defense, the hitting. I think that's going to be really the turnaround. So if you're talking about Grissom maybe can't play defense, you know, I don't think anyone on the Red Sox can play defense right now. So this wave of prospects is where I hope that changes.
Yeah, no, he's has to play second for them. And I think that's where obviously he's going to play. And he'll be fine at second, obviously, with, you're not going to overtake Albies over there, but interesting that you have him down at sixth and seventh. So I'm going to take it that you really like the guys ahead of him, because I would have imagined that you know, he'd be a little bit higher for you. But let's hear what you have to say about these. I'm really interested on Roman Anthony. So one of the big blow up guys, maybe the blow up guy, maybe if you kind of take out Junior Caminero, the elite guys. I mean, did anybody help their stock more than Roman Anthony, Adam?
No one. What Roman did last season was pretty incredible. I felt like every time I was pulling up the MILB app, he had a homer, he had two homers, he was getting on base. He was incredible last season. Before 2023, I don't think anybody would have thought that someone was going to overtake Marcelo Meyer for the top spot in the Red Sox organization. And there's still, you can still make an argument for Meyer being one. Personally, that's how I would rank them. But like you guys were talking about on one of your previous episodes, it's a group collaboration here. So you got more than one person going in on this. So he ended up one, and I don't think there's an argument between those two guys being tier one guys. They're incredible. Really excited about both of them. The hit tools, the speed, the defense. I don't think that the Red Sox have had a better 1-2 in their, you know, top 50 prospects in a long time. You know, you're looking at some two future studs here.
So help me out here. I'm a big comp guy. I know they're probably not the most useful ways of doing this, but I haven't seen him a lot in terms of live baseball. Who does he remind you of big league wise? Who's somebody we can compare him to?
That's a good question. Big league wise, Meyer, maybe want to go someone like a Dansby Swanson with maybe a little bit better hit tool. The defense is there. I think the contact is there. You know, the play style, I think, is there as well. And for Anthony, that I couldn't put my finger on one guy, but you're looking at someone who can play defense, is going to hit 20 to 30 homers, get on base, get some steals. So who would you put in that category?
I'm looking at like the ascent of Ronald Acuna when he came up and just blew through levels. You don't see this very often, where a guy just gets better as he goes up and goes from a relatively unknown to, what is he, a top 10 prospect in baseball now? I mean, not, of course, nobody is ever going to be as good as Ronald Acuna, like ever in the history of baseball moving forward. But man, that's kind of just like, I don't know if the skill set matches, because like I said, I haven't seen him live a lot. I need to kind of do some research on him and see kind of who he reminds me of. But like the ascent reminds me of that, or like a Jackson Churio as well. If we want to go non big league guy that, you know, nobody knew who he was, and now here we go. So I think, you know, you would know better than me on those comps, but it's kind of where my head's at. Nate, I know that we've had some conversations with Marcelo Meyer. When we look at kind of the big three from that draft class with Lawler and Meyer and Jackson Merrill. Where are we at with relation to those guys? How would you rank them?
I mean, for me, Meyer and Lawler are so close. It's really hard to knock Meyer down, you know, as far as you probably want me to because of his year last year. He was hurt. Lawler wasn't. Lawler had a much better 2023. I still believe in Marcelo Meyer more than I believe in Lawler. I love his left-handed swing. I love his defense. He'll always stay at short. And personally, I mean, I made up my mind about those two probably 2 years ago. But I just see a more natural hit tool with Meyer. And with Lawler, he has a beautiful swing. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's a top 25 prospect, no doubt about it. I just like Meyer's ability to get on very naturally. And the power will come, like I always say. It's always going to come. And he's going to stick it short his entire career. Maybe the last 5 years he'll go to third or something. But, I mean, this kid could be, like Adam said, he could absolutely be, like, the cornerstone for the Red Sox giant turnaround. And as far as Merrill, I'd say maybe 5, 6, 7 spots down from both of them, because for me, they're right next to one another. I don't even think there's two players in minor league baseball that are closer right now than Lawler and Meyer. But I have to go with Meyer because I've been backing him from the beginning.
What about you, Adam? Now I'm curious because I disagree with that list that he just did. So
for one and two?
Yeah, I give you three guys. You rank them 1, 2, 3. Lawler, Merrill, and Marcelo.
Oh, for that. Okay. So bias, I want to go with Meyer, but I would probably go Lawler 1 just because of the fact he's already reached the majors and he's at that level. So I would go Lawler, Meyer, and then Merrill if I had to go with those three. But hopefully, you know, when it's all said and done, you can look back, and I would love Meyer to be at the top, but we'll see.
Yeah. So just to confuse everybody, I would have Jackson Merrill closer to Lawler than I would Marcelo Meyer. I think Lawler is easy one out of that group, and then I would have Jackson Merrill in the middle of those two, and probably, you know, I'd have Lawler top 10, I'd have Jackson Merrill top 25, and I'd have Meyer top 50, kind of where I'm at. So everybody is rightfully confused because we gave all different. So there you go. All right, let's move on to tier two here. Some other guys that, you know, Kyle Teal, catcher. Seems like they got a really good value with him. Really a guy that you kind of want to build a team around. It seems like a good leader-esque type of player with obviously a great bat and at a premium position. Already put into Double A as a 21-year-old. He comes in at number 3. That's ahead of Rafaela and Miguel Blaze. So you must have some strong feelings for Kyle Teal in a limited sample size that we have of his, Adam.
Yeah, he was awesome in what he was able to do after he was drafted. I know I was talking about Basala with the Orioles, like he was the catcher of the future, just completely forgetting about Rutschman. But for the Red Sox, Teal is that guy. What he did in his time, as like I was just saying, was crazy. The power, the hitting, the receiving skills behind the plate. And like you were saying, just a great guy you want to build a team around, it feels like. So I wouldn't be surprised if he reaches the majors even by this year. For a 21-year-old kid that is already in Double A just right after getting drafted, there's a lot to be excited about with him. And I think he solidified himself in that number 3 spot for Sox prospects. So definitely want to see what he does this season. And if it goes well, then you could be looking at a guy that's pushing his way into the majors.
And I need you to convince me that Zdeno Rafaela is not Jackie Bradley Jr. 2.0.
You know, I would have a hard time doing that just because of his glove. It is one of the best in all minors. I was saying, if you put him into the majors right now, he's going to have one of the best gloves in baseball. The problem is where when he's at the plate, you don't know about the strikeouts. It was pretty inconsistent. He's gonna have a little bit of some power in his bat. He's fast, like I was saying, great defender. But the concerns is the chase rate and the strikeouts. So you're gonna have to see what he does. He did get promoted at the end of last year, and he did look pretty solid in about a month's worth of games. The Sox were playing him at second and even short a little bit, so it's interesting to see him in the infield. But long term, I think you're gonna get him in the outfield because that's where his glove is really gonna shine.
Little Mookie Betts action, huh? Did that. That's the Red Sox too. All right, Nate, is Miguel Blaze, is he your favorite Blaze in the organization?
In this organization? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he has to be. I'm not a big Blaze Jordan guy. Oh. Never really have been. But I don't really like, I'm not a real huge Miguel Blaze guy either. So, but he's young. He's only 19. He's got great tools, tooled up from the stool up, and 6 feet tall, 170. You know, he could run into a really great season here, and he could be right back up there with the maybe Anthony. Say he goes out and does something crazy next year. I mean, who knows? These kids. With these youngsters that have all the tools in the world, just like you were saying, look at it, Ronald Acuna. Before he became Ronald Acuna, I mean, nobody had basically heard of him, and Blaze has a huge head start on that. So you got to love these guys that are 19 that are just entering into single A for the first time, which he did last year and didn't do so hot, but. You know, before that, he was just playing rookie league. So there's adjustments to be made, and he's super young. So I'm going with Blaze over Blaze Jordan, Miguel Blaze over Blaze Jordan.
Now, Adam, I feel like Miguel Blaze was the hot, hyped guy that Roman Anthony, he, like, stole his talent Space Jam style, and he did it. Everybody wanted Miguel Blaze to do. So what are his chances that he can kind of turn it around? And where do you think his ceiling is? Is it, I mean, I hear a lot of people saying that, you know, he could be Roman Anthony, or not Roman Anthony, but be at the level of value at Roman Anthony in about a couple months if things go really well.
You know, that's where things were headed when he was playing in the Dominican. That's really what he looked like he was going to become until he was kind of derailed by injuries, fell down a little bit, and then Anthony had his ascension. So for Blaze, it's probably about staying healthy, keeping himself on the field. And you were just saying, he just got stateside. He hasn't been playing in the States for that long. He made his debut in 22 in the Complex League, but it was only 31 games in 23 last year before he got hurt. It's really going to come down to when he is healthy, how's the bat going to look? Because the defense is there. It's not going to have any problems there, but it's going to be about, is he able to push himself up through the minors with the bat? And if he is, he definitely has the potential to get to that level that Anthony is now at. And for a ceiling, I was going to say you would love to dream on him becoming something even close to what a Ronald Acuna is. But realistically, you're looking at someone who's just, you know, maybe a corner outfielder. He's going to hit, I don't know, maybe 260, 270, hit you a couple homers, and just be a pretty solid player. Might not be looking at an all-star, but definitely a solid contributor. And in my opinion, the best Red Sox international signing since Rafi Devers.
We move on to Tier 2, which you could also rename guys that we thought were going to be superstars that turned out not to be in Nick York, Winkelmann, Gonzalez, and Blaze Jordan. I think at one point or another, all of those guys we were ready to to see become superstars, and yet their trajectory has seemingly gone downhill, although for a variety of different reasons with these guys. Let me get your thoughts on those three guys we've been talking about for years, it seems like now, Adam.
So York is really interesting because he was – nobody thought he was going to go as high as he did in the 2020 draft. And then he had a solid showing, and then it kind of came off the tracks in 22, went to the Fall League, didn't look fantastic through the season, but picked it up there. So he set himself on a good trajectory for 23 and then really bounced back nicely. He had a great season in Portland, and he boosted himself back up to that tier three, maybe tier two area. You were talking about Grissom earlier. I would put him right above York, maybe at the end of tier two in that five slot, maybe switch him around 5-6. But for the other guys, looking at Wickelman, Gonzalez, and Perales, I'm really excited about what they're going to be able to do coming up through the upper minors now, just getting to double A. Neither of them have reached triple A yet. With the new Craig Breslow, Andrew Bailey, you know, pitching lab, I'm hoping that they can put more of that together and reach their fuller potential as maybe not top of the rotation guys, but some mid-rotation starters that are going to strike out, maybe a 10 over five inning span and going to post a 3.5 ERA, maybe lower. I think they have the potential to do that, and it's going to be exciting to see what they can do with the new Red Sox pitching development.
All right. I love Blaze Jordan, too. You got to talk about him a little bit. This guy is awesome in a lot of different regards, as you mentioned, or as Scott mentioned in his write-up. He's the one who wrote up Blaze Jordan. But okay, people used to like this guy a lot, and I saw, he's a fringe top 100 guy, and he really hasn't done anything to be bad. Like, he's been average at worst and pretty darn good most of the other times. So we always knew he had to hit as a first baseman prospect, but he's sort of done that his entire career at a very, very young age. He's 20 years old. He's in double A. I mean, what more could we have asked from this guy?
I don't think you could be asking for much more in terms of the work he's putting in to better himself. He's been very vocal about his offseason, and he's kind of going into more in-depth as to what it looks like for someone that's playing at that level. And I think really after getting the double A, maybe the stats didn't reflect it, but I didn't think he had ever looked better in terms of his production and what he was doing in the field, in terms of what the team itself looked like. Like, there are points where I was looking at the Red Sox double A roster and I was like, man, I want to watch these guys over the big leagues because they were playing that well. And the power's always been there. You think back to him competing in the high school home run derby. And the OBP is up from years past. And like you said, he hasn't done anything bad to get people to dislike him. I just think it's the fact that the numbers don't blow you away like some of the other top prospects do in this organization outside the Red Sox. But there's a reason why he's in the top 10. And I'm excited to see what he can do, not just maybe in Portland, but getting to that AAA level and seeing what he can do in Worcester.
Yeah, and this is all while overcoming anxiety and depression, which he's been very vocal about, and Scott mentions in his write-up as well. So, if he's at his worst mentally and still doing that sort of stuff, you wonder where he could be at when he's in a good place and doing things the right way. He gets to be 24, 25, and he really matured. It's still exciting. Like, I still like him. I don't care what you say, Nate. Still in on Blaze.
Hey, no, it's a good point regarding the anxiety and depression. It is. It's a great point. My bad, Blaze. I didn't mean to come down on you that hard. I was thinking of baseball and baseball only, but now I'm looking at the numbers and you guys are both right. He's I think with guys like Blaze, who put themselves out there in the media's eye at a very early age, can lead themselves into being not liked for no reason. And perhaps that's what I fell into there for a split second. But got to give a guy his props where his props are due. And you're right. He really hasn't done anything to merit any type of hate. So, you know, best wishes.
It boils down to being a first baseman only prospect. And that's so difficult to do. We just don't see that very often. That they come up
from the right hand side with power as his first tool. You know, I mean, you just don't see that stuff very often. I think that's probably more of where I was coming from, but yeah, you're right. It's very hard to overcome.
Now, Adam, you had a lot of guys that made the major league debut for the Red Sox, which we probably weren't banking on, especially if you thought the team was going to be competitive, which I kind of did. I thought they were going to be a lot better than they ended up being, but we mentioned Rafaela. We also have Willier Abreu making his debut. It looked not too bad, actually, up there. We also had, who was the other guy that I just saw here? David Hamilton, who I didn't have liked for a long time. We've got a nice speed guy back from the Milwaukee days. We had Brandon Walter make it, Chris Murphy make it, Isaiah Campbell made it. So, you know, that part is kind of the cool thing about having a really crummy, no offense, MLB team, that you get to see some of these guys you didn't expect to see or maybe wouldn't have ever made it otherwise. Any hope for those guys as part of future plans for the Red Sox moving forward?
You know, a lot of the guys you just mentioned, I think, are probably close to, like, not 26 man on the roster guys, but not far from it. They're backup guys, maybe some mid-inning relievers. Campbell, I'm not too sure about, just coming over from the Mariners and the Luis Urias trade. But in terms of Walter, Murphy, you know, just some relievers, Willier Abreu was pretty interesting. A lot of people are really high on him coming into this season. He's going to be on the major league squad. I'm just not sure personally how his production's going to look. I'm not really sold on him as much as others are. The power's there. It's just a matter of what else is he going to do? Is he going to be driving in runs? Where is he going to slot in the outfield? It's a pretty tough picture looking at the major league squad because, like you just said, they're not great, but they have a ton of outfielders that maybe they move one. I don't know. But the other guys that are in that fringy AAA, maybe make the majors area, I don't think it's great. I think a lot of the talent in this organization is, honestly, a lot of it you can just flat out say is in Portland right now. But then you got some of the guys lower, maybe single A, high A, and even complex league in the Dominican still.
Yeah, I'm looking at the depth chart for the Red Sox. And, you know, your infield's pretty set, right? I mean, that it's going to be tough to crack the infield unless Trevor Story just can't rediscover himself. The outfield's a little bit more open. So if you're an outfielder in this organization, I feel like you have some ways to go. Now, you watch way more Red Sox games than I do, but I certainly can't think that, you know, Duran and O'Neill and Abreu and Yoshida, I guess Yoshida to some degree, but those guys, I could see a world where each of them just are gone out of baseball in a year. And not to say I don't like those guys and I wouldn't pick them up. I like Duran a lot, but I could see a scenario where he kind of goes back to his old ways. So the outfield is wide open and the pitching rotation is quite open as well, but we didn't mention too many pitching prospects. I know we kind of touched on Gonzalez and Perales, but, you know, there is ways to get into this lineup. Overall, I mean, I apologize for going after the Orioles because it looks like crap compared to the Orioles. I think it's more how good the Orioles are.
No argument there.
Yeah, but I mean, two tier one guys that are, you know, you're telling me they're studs. You know more about Roman Anthony than I do, and Meyer I haven't seen as much as you, so I have to defer to you. So there is some future here. What do you think? Let me ask you this kind of at the end when I assume lots of people are no longer listening, and then we can just talk and have fun. give me like the future guys, you know, in 5 years, who do you want at sort of each position here for the Red Sox? Let me kind of throw you some curveballs along the lines of you know, Cass is going to be at first. Grissom's probably going to stay at second. Let's say Devers Lee. Is Devers signed long term? You have to.
Yep, Devers 10-year extension last year.
Okay, so he's going to be there for a while. Let's assume Story's gone. You got to find a shortstop. Let's say they move Yoshida at some point, so you need to find a designated hitter, and then you got to fill your outfield, and you can keep one of O'Neill, Duran, and Abreu, sort of, and then give me kind of your dream rotation if everything goes according to plan right now.
You also need a catcher.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
That's the Connor easiest. Wong. We can just throw Teal at catcher right off the bat.
I wanted to give you that big alley-oop there, Adam.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So I guess if we start in the rotation, that's maybe a little bit more of a cloudy picture just because of how little depth they have there. Like, if you look at the rotation right now in the majors, it's like, what are we doing? But if you go to the minors, it's still not great, because while they are a much better system for prospects than they were just 2-3 years ago, the pitching is probably bottom five organizations for pitching prospects. So I would like to imagine Bayo is a number one in the coming future. I think Perales and Gonzalez are going to get to the majors and solidify themselves as part of the rotation. Maybe you sign a guy like, I don't know, I would love them to get Jordan Montgomery, but it looks like they have no interest in pretty much doing anything right now. But it's a lot easier to project the infield, I would say, because there's no doubt in my mind that Meyer is going to be the everyday shortstop at some point. Devers is going to be at third. Maybe you have some type of platoon with Grissom at second, and York is going to make the majors eventually. Who knows if it's with the Red Sox, but if it is, he'll be at second. First base, Costas is there. That's not going to change anytime soon. And like you were just saying, the outfield's probably the toughest, because you got all of these guys that you don't really know what you have with. They just got Tyler O'Neill. I was talking about earlier how you don't know exactly what Willie Abreu is yet. Yoshida, I don't know, he moved him to DH. Maybe he's not with the organization anymore. So for the future of the outfield, I'm going to keep Abreu there and just for now. But for center, I think you could dream on Rafaela being one of the best defenders in the game there. You're going to have Roman up in the majors soon. And then as a fourth outfielder, I'm going to take Blaze, because I think eventually he's going to make it to the majors. There's just too much talent in the profile there to not. And for a DH, I think that's a tough ask for, you know, someone like a Yolan Cespedes. He's 18 in the Dominican. He's probably going to be a future everyday infielder. Who knows if it's with the Red Sox, but I would put Blaze Jordan in that DH spot for now, just because of the power in his bat and what he's able to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can't ignore Blaze. I gave you a great opening there at DH. Perfect.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't forget.
He's, you know, he's going to hit lefties, I think, at the minimum at some point. So you might even have him, you know, and somehow work around with Grissom and I don't know. They're not the greatest platoon guys, but interesting stuff there. It does sound a little bit brighter when you take out these other guys like Story and Tyler O'Neill, and you plug in these prospects that were, you know, assuming kind of meet their ceiling or at least half what we hope for and become major leaguers. The rotation is going to be the toughest spot. That one, I guess you trade Giolito for some prospects, and maybe you trade Pivetta too, and see what you can acquire. I still don't know why they, you know, are bumping Whitlock back and forth, and you have Tanner Hawk as well, who I've liked.
Right. Maybe
you trade Kenley for somebody later. There's some things that they can do. So obviously the future can go in a lot of different directions, but good to hear it from a Red Sox fan, a true, tried and true Red Sox fan. Not gonna sugarcoat anything, it sounds like.
Well, at least we got a Netflix documentary coming next year.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's super cool. I hope they do a good job on it. Yeah, they're doing a Hard Knocks baseball.
Oh yeah. On Netflix, huh? Mm-hmm. Nice. Netflix, yeah. And the first team are the Red Sox? Yep.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Cool. I hope.
Of course, of all years, they gotta go with 2024.
Yeah. Yeah, Netflix does a good job on their documentaries.
They do. They do. I love that golf one. But anyway.
Oh, the golf one's good, or the F1. F1's good, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty. I think that's going to do it for us here. Again, we're going to have to make this a two-part episode where we go over the Yankees, which I don't think anybody's going to be too angry about. Nobody except those Yankees fans. And everybody that's not a Yankees fan is probably fine with it. So no offense to those Yankees. Well, I guess a little offense was meant. And we do need to talk about the Rays as well. They are fascinating. You know, we used to always think that there's just this stacked team in the Rays, you know, but it's not as stacked as it used to be, this Rays team in the minors. So we'll see what they can do and talk about those guys as well. But we'll do a part two, and we'll hit up another division, see if we can't steamroll two in that part two episode. But that's going to do it for us today. Go and hit those books, Adam. I know that's what I was doing on a Friday night at UC Santa Barbara. Yeah. Definitely was studying.
Yeah. Stuff. Studying hard.
Adam, thanks for joining us. Anything that you want to plug, that things you're working on? I know you're probably taking a little bit of a break after all that hard work, but what can we look for from you going forward?
So, right before we started the top 50s, I was just starting out with Process 1500, very new, and I didn't know how great I was going to be at doing articles, but I started this series of 5 emerging players in each organization, and I definitely want to continue that. If anybody has any team suggestions, I'm open. I know you're a Braves fan. I actually already did the Braves, so that one's available, but I'm always looking at prospects that are, you know, kind of mired down lower in the minor leagues. So if anyone has any suggestions for teams, I'd love to get started on that. I'm going to probably run that until the beginning of the regular season. And then once we hit the off season for this year, we can start that right up again. But it's been great just in my few months. I love the minor leagues. I've learned so much just from these top 50s and listening to some podcasts that you guys do. It's a great time, and I really think that minor league baseball is in maybe the best spot that it's ever been. As much exposure, and there's a lot of players to be just really excited about.
Amen.
Exactly. It's really like a rabbit hole type of thing that once you get going with the prospects, you know that you can never know them all, so you keep going down and down like Alice in Wonderland, and then you're in a whole new world. So that's what I know Nate and I have done. So great time.
Yeah. The Mad Hatter and that fat cat, whatever its name was.
Beautiful. All right. Well, this is Futures Focus. My name is Alex Sanchez, Nate Eckert, my normal co-host. And thanks again to Adam Green for coming on. We're going to have you on more often. It was a great in-depth look at some of these guys. Hopefully we helped out some of those dynasty players out there and just people in general getting to know these guys, what to expect in the future. So we'll be back next week. Enjoy. Oh, I guess we should do some predictions since we're here. We got Super Bowl coming up. We should maybe be careful. It might be released after Super Bowl. I don't know how crazy Scott's going to get. He might be a little too concerned. But let's get our predictions in anyway. This is getting recorded before the Super Bowl. What do you got? Give me a score and give me a team, Nate.
Oof. Okay. I'm going to say the Steelers are in it, right? This year? Just kidding. I'm going to take the Niners, and I'm going to say 24-23. Niners.
Whoa, interesting. All right, Adam, what do you got?
So I would love to pick the Niners because I can't stand the Chiefs as a Patriots fan right now, but I really have to be realistic, and I think Mahomes is going to get it done for his third time. So I'm going to go 30-26 Chiefs. As much as I hate to say it, I think they're going to pull it off, and you know, their dynasty's on a roll right now.
Give me the Niners in a semi blowout, 27-17.
Nice.
So we talked about Marcus Camby. We talked about minor league prospects. That's everything. That's the trifecta. All right, boys, we're out of here. Futures Focus, thanks again for listening, for everybody that makes it through the end of this. And we'll be back soon. Futures Focus, we're out.